This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 227 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuddersincpodcast.com. And joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
You know, Bruce, I have to tell you.
Yeah.
I stand in front of you, and by stand I mean sit,
yeah,
with a heavy heart.
Oh, why is that?
Well, you know, I got some feedback from one of our six listeners this week, and it saddened me somewhat, and something I said at an earlier podcast created an unintended circumstances. You know, I'm fairly irreverent. I say stuff sometimes without thinking, and I said some stuff that, you know, I certainly didn't think this would happen.
Right.
And got the feedback during the week, and I feel an apology's in order.
Oh, why? What did you say?
So, well, I just have to apologise to Harry Melos, and probably to all the listeners, really, to be honest with you. It's to do with your It was to do with your panorama discussion. I think it was the last episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I mentioned the fact that I use my iPhone to, you know, do a pre-pano as such.
Yeah.
And it turns out he thought that was good advice and quite a good tip. And yeah, that was not something I sort of came on this podcast expecting to be able to hand out sort of any, you know, useful information. And, you know, I think it's added a fair amount of extra weight on my shoulders that, you know, there could be expectations that something positive may come out of this,
right,
that there could be something useful further down the track that I might add to the discussions at point to point.
Right.
So, look, I'd just like to apologise for any unexpected tips that do come out. They're certainly not intentional. Please bypass them and just ignore as if they never happened, really.
Yes. You know? So we should have a disclaimer that says, should you happen to learn anything about photography by listening to this podcast, it is a pure coincidence and we take no responsibility for it. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly so. Exactly so, Harry. I apologise, and to all the other listeners. Yeah, I'll try not let it happen again. Disgraceful behaviour on my part, I have to tell you. Shocking stuff.
Oh dear.
But other than that, good.
Good to hear. So how was Bill O'Wheeler?
Bill O? It was awesome. Okay. Well, any day you leave home,
yeah,
in the pouring rain,
yep,
and the dark, and it's, you know, 9 degrees Celsius.
Right.
And you arrive somewhere where it's 25 degrees Celsius and blue sky day after day after day. It's a good weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I spent three glorious days in the sunshine. You get back on the plane coming home. I was arriving in Melbourne at midnight on Sunday night, and yeah, the pilot says, yeah, the weather upon landing is 6 degrees and raining. It's like, yeah, I'm gonna miss this weekend. But I had a lot of fun, you know. I met some lovely people.
Yeah.
And also I met all the attendees of the workshop too. I met lots of lovely people. We had a ball. We had a fair variety of knowledge base of people attending. There's some people who are just doing it for amateur, for their own pleasure, and some people doing it as a business. So there's a fair mix of people there. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, right.
Two good workshops, lousy pizza, and I came home.
Looked like you had a good turnout. Like from the group photo I saw, there looked like there was about 15 odd people there.
Oh yeah, we got some people who were passing by down the street just to line up for a couple of seconds.
Nice.
No, it was 10 people per day, plus a couple of models,
okay,
plus me. Yeah, and I'm wide enough to make up for like two people. So yeah, it was. Yeah, I tried to keep the workshops no more than 10 when I'm doing them by myself, and
yep.
Yeah, it was good. It was. There were awesome people. We had some fun, some good laughs. Yeah, the models were very inexperienced, which is always a challenge. And being young, inexperienced, and being dobbed in to do it, they weren't necessarily the most willing participants of some of the things I wanted them to do. You know, always say, can you come over here? And of course, I always demonstrate the pose. Can you come over here and do this? Just get this look of death. Is that a no? But no, we had a ball. I really did. And it was a great drive out there, a couple of hours out from Rockhampton. And there was some lovely countryside. I love being in the country. I'm never happier than when I'm in the countryside.
Yeah.
Which is why I live in an urban environment, of course, because I don't want to be happy. But I just love getting out in the country, and it was just fantastic. So it was a good experience, and being somewhere you've never been before is always a pleasure too. So
absolutely,
I'm looking at getting me back there at another time, which would be great. And on the way back through, I met up with the lovely Claire Tungate in Rockhampton, who came to our original Mia One Shoot a Lotta workshop in New Zealand.
Yep,
and as part of such discussions over a few beers, I've just announced Rockhampton dates.
Oh, fantastic!
So I'm heading back, and I might be heading to Yeppoon as well, which is 20 minutes ahead of Rockhampton. So
yeah, not a fan of Yeppoon. Not a fan.
Really?
Only went
just
there
the name
once.
By itself?
Or? No, I only went there once, and I don't know whether it's always like this or whether I just caught the wind on a bad day, but there was this horrid stench that just permeated the entire town. And it just smelled like rotting seaweed, which it probably was.
It probably was.
It was just
I used to live in a suburb of Melbourne that had exactly that problem.
Is that right?
From time to time, at certain times of the year. Exactly that, man. Down Altona way, in Altona Beach. And beautiful, there's a great area to walk. There's a beautiful beach, a great pier, just a lovely little strip shops of, little cafes. And awesome little place to live.
Yeah.
But just for a little period of time every year, there's that decaying seaweed smell.
Right.
It did take some of the gloss of living there.
So I don't know, maybe Yeppoon is absolutely gorgeous for 350 days of the year and it's just 2 weeks where it stinks. I don't know. Like I said, I was only there once. It was one day. Actually, it wasn't even one day. It was like 1 hour. I was out of there, But anyway, it's probably a lovely place.
You spent a week there 1 hour.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Hey, listen, I want to throw out a thank you. Remember weeks and weeks ago?
It was my pleasure. I didn't have to. not to me, you mean?
No, not to you. When we were discussing, me heading off to Borneo.
Yes.
We got talking about waterproof, options for your camera, and we talked about the storm jacket, and I mentioned this little DIY hack that was on DIY Photography of just getting some waterproof fabric to, drape over the top your lens and your camera body. Well, in true Bruce Williams fashion, I didn't go ahead and buy a storm jacket. And I decided I would go the DIY option. And so I started looking around for waterproof fabric. And so I started looking on eBay yesterday and thinking, and then I started thinking, I've probably left it too late because we fly out next Wednesday, 3 days after this podcast comes out, we're out of the country. And I'm thinking, I've probably left it too late to order anything off eBay because it won't get here in time. So I did a Google search and I came up with a company based in Sydney called Materialized. And these guys basically not really wholesalers, but they deal with the hospitality and health industries doing fabrics for, like wall decorations and, industrial quantities of furniture and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And so I rang them up and I said, look, I'm after some, Gore-Tex type fabric. It doesn't have to be Gore-Tex. I'm sure there are other things like it. And she said, hang on a sec, I'll put you through to Julie. So I get put through to this girl, Julie, and she says...
Jules?
Yeah, Jules to her mates. And Julie says, what are you after? And I said, I'm just after a piece of fabric to go over my camera when I'm shooting in a wet environment, and I want to keep the moisture off the top of the camera from getting into all the moving parts. And she said, so how much are you after? And I said, just a, maybe 30-centimetre square piece, I said, I don't know what they cost or what you've got, but as long as it's waterproof, it'll be fine. And she goes, I'll just send you a sample. And I said, I'm leaving the country next week. I don't have time to muck around with a sample. Just send me something and, can I pay for it over the phone? She goes, nah, don't worry about it. She said, I'll chuck it in the mail today and, And she didn't charge me, and she wouldn't take money from me over the phone. And this was yesterday.
So what you're doing is you're reporting live on air company theft.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. She might own. She might own the company.
Dump her in by name. By name. You dump her into her bosses. So, the boss could be a photography enthusiast who listens to us. He could be one of the six.
But I thought that was really lovely. She didn't know anything about me. She didn't know I had a podcast. She didn't know how many people I talk to every week. And she sent me this piece of fabric in the mail. It was here when I got home tonight, right? So, in 24 hours, she has sent me a piece of fabric that, you know, probably didn't cost the company anything because it was a sample piece, but it's about 50 centimetres square. It's massive, way more than I needed. And, you know, and she wouldn't take payment for it. And I just thought, wow, it's so rare to get, you know, that kind of just great customer service, you know. But, you know, and she did that knowing that she wasn't going to make any money out of it. And I just thought, that is awesome. So, Julie, thank you very much. She probably won't ever hear this. I don't know. I'll probably send her an email and say, hey, mentioned you on the podcast. But
thanks for stealing for me.
Yeah, something like that.
I'm sorry that when your company goes out of business and you lose jobs, it's because of the 400 people you sent samples through. Because, actually, well, you'll probably get six calls from all our listeners now. They'll all want a sample, please.
Yeah. So I thought that was really lovely. So
That is lovely. What was the name of the company again?
Materialized. And it's materialized.com. And
so if you need any theft or money laundering, or to be able to smuggle drugs in from overseas or something, and they've probably got the fabric you can wrap around the drugs, the dogs can't smell it. Julie's your man.
You're a shocker.
Well, yeah, that's just the way I think. She doesn't happen to know that Chappelle Corby by any chance, does she? Didn't have a Gore-Tex boogie board bag, did she? I'll send it up to your fridge.
Materialized suppliers to Chappelle Corby.
Yeah, I'll send it to the airport for you. Pick up in Bali. It's okay.
She's not going to be very happy with this mention at all.
She's probably undercover spy for FedPol or something, you know. If you happen to know any police that you know have access to a sniffer dog, maybe you might want to send them up to kind of sniff that material before we take it into Burma, because I think they're fairly strict over there with their drugs. It's going to be hard to be doing a podcast out of a Burmese jail, though.
It's Borneo, not Burma.
Oh, it's from Borneo. It's probably just as bad, you know. Yes, no. It's Shuttersink from Borneo. It's Bruce Williams, Bubba, and Glenn Lavender from Melbourne, Australia.
Coming to you live from Changi Prison in Singapore.
That's right. Hey, Bubba, how you doing? Oh, good. you love her so much.
Dear, awesome. Fantastic. So Borneo next week. So that means that this will be the last podcast for 3 weeks. There will be a 3-week break while I'm gone.
Tell you what, if anyone's feeling like they're just missing out, we'll put my phone number up on the Shuttersink Facebook page, and people maybe just give a call when they normally listen to the podcast. I'll just ramble on for an hour. You know, it'll make the missus happy. I'll get her out of her hair for a while. We can do that. You know, get your weekly fix.
Excellent idea.
No, it's probably a good idea. It's probably a good idea not to do that. So, do we have anything useful for our listeners this week?
Aaron King said, because I said, you know, fire us your questions. Aaron King said, bacon bits or croutons? Oh, camera questions. Is there any substance to the rumours that Nikon is bringing out a D400 to replace the D300S sometime soonish? Because I'll be all up in that camera if they do. Well, Nikon, allegedly. I don't know. I haven't heard.
I'm sure they will at some stage.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be a successor to the 300S at some point.
But what makes you think it's going to be any good?
says the Canon user.
No, but I mean, of any camera, I mean, why get all hot and heavy about it? You know, the 300S, as an example, is an awesome, awesome, phenomenal, excellent camera.
Mm.
What makes you think the 400 is going to make your photos any better?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a Canon user. What makes the Mark 47 going to be any better than the Mark 46?
Yeah.
You know, realistically, is it going to make your photography any better? Is it going to make your vision better? Is it going to make you see clearer and be able to craft and solve problems you couldn't solve before?
No, absolutely not.
This is going to be a new box, but I get the new box fascination. I'm rather partial to them myself. Yeah. I love a new box to open up.
Yeah.
But I know that doesn't matter which camera I pull out, any brand, any type, all my images look the same.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a nuance of tweaky bit of, you know, a little bit of noise here or a little bit of this and that there, but at the end of the day, the reality is, yeah, they're all the same.
Yep.
Yeah, I'd be getting more hot and heavy about, well, you know, what lens can I get next that can change the way I see the world?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's going to change my viewpoint. That's going to change my vision.
Mm-hmm.
The box just opens and closes. Yeah, I just don't get excited about cameras, I'm afraid. It's just, yeah, you may not have noticed.
I must admit, you know, there were people who said, oh, was I going to race out and buy the Alpha 99 when it came out? And I said, no, I'm not, simply because I don't feel like I have squeezed every bit of creativity that I can out of my 850 yet.
And well, you can't, because there's no creativity in your 850.
No, but it's about pushing the boundaries of what the camera can do, and that comes down to your creativity. And I don't feel like I've done enough with my 850 to warrant going and spending, you know, another $3,000 on a new body. Admittedly, the 99 does video, which my 850 doesn't, but that's not a big enough selling point for me.
Well, that's it too, isn't it? Is that something that's going to excite you enough? And understand, you know, the video may seem appealing, but you know, as we've said, it's a very, very steep learning curve to get good video out of these things.
Absolutely.
And if that's your bent, if that's where your passion is, you know, it can do phenomenal stuff, but wow, it is not easy.
Okay, but you even know? If you bought a DSLR that did video and it was your first foray into video, and even if you took to the whole video process like a duck to water, what are you going to do with the video footage? Are you planning on becoming a professional videographer? Are you going to somehow make money back out of the video footage that will exceed the money that you were making out of your still photography? Are you going to start shooting video stock that is going to earn royalties forever and a day? Like, what's the attraction?
I want to spend 47 hours editing my 30-second clip of my kid jumping up and down on the smaller sister.
Exactly. Like, as if we don't spend enough time in front of Lightroom as it is. Like, who wants to be sitting down editing video, you know? And even if you, you know, are great
but
at shooting...
That just shows where our brains are at, though.
Yeah, probably. But being great at shooting video
just
doesn't...
shows where our visual brains are.
Being great at shooting video doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be great at editing...
I won't interrupt again.
...video. Thank you, mate.
Well, that's... Yes, exactly. So what you're saying there, though, Bruce, to me, if I can just sort of succinct that, is being great at shooting videos doesn't necessarily mean you can be any good at editing videos.
I think that's where I was trying to get to, yes.
Yeah.
Except for the interruptions. Yeah. Andrew Edgar has said, should I get the shutter of my Canon 1D S2 replaced for the second time or just go and buy a 5D Mark III?
Well, it depends what a shutter costs to get replaced. The last one I had done was about, I think, $550, something like that.
Now, what's the difference technically? I know technical things are, you know, not your ballpark, but what's the difference between the 1D series and the 5D series?
Well, the ones is their pro body, so they've basically got a built-in battery grip. So is that, you know, right. Imagine a camera with a grip on the bottom, but all in one, so it's, yep, you know, more soft. It's certainly much more solidly built. I mean, it's like a tank, that thing. They weigh a ton. And yeah, they are far more weatherproof. So I mean, it's the full-on heavy-duty pro camera versus a 5D Mark III, which, and people are going to hate me saying this, is really an amateur pro camera.
Right.
You know, I mean, all the pros use it. I'm not saying, but Canon know. Canon say that, you know, we want you to be, if you're a full-on heavy-use pro, you're a one series user.
Right.
And they've always had that numbering system. What happened in Canon somehow from film to digital slipped and lost the 3 series? So it's gone. It used to be in back in the days of film, they used to have 1, 3, and 5.
Right.
Yeah, it was a series of cameras, EOS 1, EOS 3, EOS 5.
Right.
And the 1 was the full-on pro. The 3 was the bridge between pro and amateur, but with the more slightly more leaning towards pro. And the 5 was the very keen amateur model.
Right. Yeah.
And if we think back to the beginning days of digital, full frame slash 35 mil sensor digital, the 5D, when it came out, was meant to be the first affordable for an amateur, very keen amateur, 35 mil sensor camera. It wasn't necessarily coming out as a pro camera. It was coming out to bring the pro product down to the mass market.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, the thing is, the camera is so good as far as image quality goes. It's more than acceptable as a pro camera, but it's not going to take the beating that a 1 series is going to take.
Right.
And I've got to say, I've been very disappointed over the last 5 or 6 years that Canon haven't brought out a 3 series digital.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that sort of in between. That's not, the EOS 1DX, their top of the range, is probably the best camera ever made in that size sensor camera in the history of photography.
Okay.
It's a remarkable piece of kit.
Not to rile up the Nikon users at all.
No, but it is. But look, you go look at any reviews, and they'll all agree that it's for what it can, it's designed to do, it does it incredibly well. Doesn't mean it's for everybody, but for what it's designed to do.
Yeah.
But there's a hell of a big gap between that at $8,000 or so dollars, and the 5D Mark III at $3,000.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's a big leap, and there's nothing in that mid range at $5,000 body anymore.
Yeah,
which
right.
is, you know, when the 5D originally came out, I think it was about $4,000 or so for the body alone. So it was up in that kind of ballpark, but now there's just a big gap, a big hole. And I'd like to see something that's sort of more like a 1DX, but in a scaled down body, and for that $4,500-$5,000 price point. But that's just me. But so back to Andrew's actual question. Yeah, it depends on what. If he's beating the living daylights out of his camera, I'd replace the shutter, because that camera's going to take a licking and keep on kicking.
Yeah, he's obviously firing some shots if he's gone through 2 entire shutters.
Yeah, and that's 700,000 shots or something right there.
Really, that many?
Yeah, I mean, but they're pro. Yeah, I think they're rated to 300,000 or so shots. So
wow,
those bodies. So. You are going through a fair whack of photos. So I would say, if you're beating the living daylights out of it, stick to it.
And the shutter on the 5D, the 5 series, are they
140-150 actuations?
Right.
1,000, not 155. Yeah. So that didn't last very long. That's expensive roll of film. he's the only one who can answer it. If he's beating his gear up, stick to the 1DS.
Right.
If he's
doing studio work, then he could probably get by on the 5.
Yeah, and even if he's just out there doing moderate
Weddings.
Amount of workload, then the 5D's and look at the 5D's certainly going to be a hell of a lot better in low light than the 1DS. So depending on what he's shooting as well,
where
the screen's a lot bigger, it's a lot faster.
Why will it be better in low light?
Oh, good. It's the 1DS2 is a 5-year-old camera or 6-year-old camera now. So it's ISO sensitivity ability is pales into comparison compared to what the 5D3 can do.
Right, fair enough.
And look, the processing speed of the 5D3 is going to be a hell of a lot faster as well. So its write times are faster. Its screen's a million times better quality about twice as big. So there's lots of good factors, but we're talking about a $500 investment versus a $3,000 investment as well. So it's a fair jump up to have to make that call too.
Mm.
Yeah. And it goes back to the same thing you were just saying about your Sony. The camera he's got, the 1DS2, is an awesome camera. It's fully capable of doing amazing stuff.
Yep.
Not necessarily everything. Yeah, it can't do everything. But what it does incredibly well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does it have to be put out to pasture?
Good question. Harry Melos asked Lightroom 5.
Again?
Thoughts? Is it worth the upgrade?
I have to apologize
to Harry, because in the last week I have barely gone near it, even though I've got it. I just haven't had the time. So I'm not in a position to say yet. The people
We'll have a full episode review of Lightroom 5. We'll dedicate an entire episode to it, and we'll research it fully, come up with every possible nuance and stuff just before Lightroom 6 comes out.
Yes.
You'll have that for you, Harry.
Absolutely.
Now, we don't want to rush into this thing.
That's right. You have to be measured. Belinda Coulson has asked, workflow. Have read so many ways but haven't nailed it. If you were able to start all over again, what software and what would your workflow look like? How long on your selected images for editing? I feel I waste too much time and it's me.
It really does get to it, doesn't it? What she's saying.
Yes. I personally really like Lightroom. I feel like Adobe have obviously listened to photographers in the way they've structured the program, from the import dialog box, you know, with all the things that it allows you to do during the import, so that you can, you know, set up, you know, templates of keywording and copyright metadata tagging and all that sort of stuff that you can set up so that, you know, all that stuff gets assigned as you ingest your images from your memory card onto your hard drive. Then through all the tools that are in Lightroom, I feel it's a really well thought out piece of software. That's just me. Glyn, your thoughts?
I agree.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
Yeah,
it's. I think said. Look, you got to compare the cost of the software, which is relatively inexpensive.
Yeah.
And for what it's capabilities are astounding for that price point.
Yeah.
So it's. I would definitely say that's the software you've got to be using as your start point for all this.
Yep.
And exactly your naming. Workflow and how you do all the other stuff. There's a lot of ways to go around that, isn't there? You know, there's a lot of different ways of deciding what you do.
Do you rename your images?
No, not on import.
No,
I just keep them dated. Which is wrong.
Why? Why is it wrong?
If I want a searchable database of all my images.
Mm-hmm.
That I can just simply, you know, like this weekend, gone up Belo as an example, to be able to just very quickly find that. Yeah, 2 years down the track, if I import it with the same naming, I won't necessarily remember what date it was. I was there in 2 years' time. Yeah, mm-hmm. So I might be able to search the date and find the images. But if I had a naming structure that I followed religiously, then it would be a lot easier to find that sort of stuff.
If you cast your mind back to the last time the Photographic Trade Show was on in Sydney, you may recall that I did a couple of presentations on the CPW stand where I discussed the whole idea of assigning keywords at the time that you import.
Mm-hmm.
For exactly that reason. And because the metadata capabilities within Lightroom far exceed, in my opinion, what you can do by simply naming the file.
Okay.
You know, I love the hierarchical nature of the keywording structure within Lightroom, where, you know, I can tag something with Springfield, the suburb I live in, and then I can nest that under New South Wales, and I can nest that under Australia, and I can do that with all manner of keywords. You know, I could have Ferrari nested under motor car, nested under vehicles, you know. So if I wanted to find all photographs that had motor cars, I could search for motor cars and I would find not only Ferraris, I'd find Bugattis and Lamborghinis and whatever. If I just wanted to find Ferraris, I'd use Ferraris as a keyword and I'd only find Ferraris. Yeah, things like that.
Assuming, of course, that you actually spend that much time putting all those keywords in.
Well, here's the thing. I do. And it comes back to Belinda's question.
Yeah, I know. And you're the mind, you're top of mind who would. I mean that in not as insulting a way as it sounds.
No, but Belinda's talking about if you were starting afresh, and I said this when I did those talks.
Starting afresh with your brain or starting afresh with my brain?
Well,
no, deadly serious. It sounds silly, but I mean you're of a pedantic nature that is dedicated and will follow that procedure all the time. Whereas for me to name something below and the date,
right,
it's done. So you know what I mean? So I mean, for me, I'll never follow that in depth. I don't tag photos on anything I've ever put, any website I've put stuff on. I've only just started using hashtags or tagging on Instagram. Yeah, right. Only because no one was looking at my photos. But I mean, so it's something I've never done because I'm far too haphazard about what I do to do that. However, I could just, so there's two, there's, yeah, your way is absolutely the best way to do it, for sure, without a doubt, without, you know, finding the absolute best way of finding stuff down the track. If you can follow your regime, it's perfect.
Right.
I could never do it.
Really? Even if you were starting from scratch?
Never at all. Because I'm not going to sit there and when I get home at 10 o'clock at night, so I'm going to post-process the photos so I can get them done and get them out of the way.
Yep.
And we're going to sit there and tag in Lightroom all the possible connotations and every theoretical word or whatever. I'm just never going to do it.
Wow. It doesn't take me that long.
It's just... Yeah, but if it takes you 5 minutes, that's... You know, I've got ADOWT, dude. You know, I'm not going to spend that long.
Okay.
But you're absolutely spot on. You're spot on. That is absolutely the best way to do it.
Right.
I just don't know how many people
do that
can actually follow that regime.
Wow. Okay.
Not so much that they do it. It's just that even if they were shown how to do it, would ever be able to keep it up?
Would they bother? Yeah. Well, you see, here's the thing. I mean, when I first got Lightroom, I already had a catalog of, you know, probably 10,000 digital images. And
yeah.
I knew that there was no way known I was ever going to be able to go back and get all of those images tagged. So I made it just a mental decision that, okay, from here on, from this point forward, I will tag every single thing that I import. So at least everything from this point on is searchable. And those first 10,000 images, I can generally remember them. So if I know that I want, you know, if I start thinking about, oh, where was that image of me in that park? Then Max took the photograph and he was about 3 years old. I go, okay, well, that was definitely in those first 10,000 images that aren't tagged. And I can pretty quickly find it just by going through the date structure of the folders. Because, again, you know, one of the things I love about Lightroom is it allows you to import your photos and use the date information as the folder structure. And to me, that makes perfect sense, to keep everything in a date-ordered catalog. So anyway, yeah, okay, well, that's interesting that you think I'm in the minority for that workflow.
Well, no, it's not necessarily that you're in a minority, but yeah, I'm fairly experienced in life at trying to look at how other people see the world.
Right.
Because I used to run a company with 80 staff.
Okay.
So that's 80 different personalities.
Yep.
And needing to think, well, just because I think and feel this way,
yes,
it doesn't necessarily mean others think and feel this way. So I've become fairly adept at knowing who I am as a person and what all my foibles are,
sure,
all the very millions of them, and therefore saying, well, it's just, that's my way,
yep,
but it's not necessarily everybody's the right way or the wrong way. It's just my way.
Yep. Yeah,
and my way would do people's heads in a lot of the way. Yeah, it'd do your head in, because you're of a certain type. But I also get this when training at workshops. There's, when I start going into stops of exposure,
right?
Yeah, balancing the stops between aperture, shutter speed, ISO, flash power stops, etc.
Yep.
Some people's eyes glaze over and small bits of dribble come out of their mouth. Some people get little bits of smoke coming out of their mouth, and some people lean forward and their eyes glimmer as, oh my God, this is the thing I've been looking for my entire life.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I see it across the room, and I'll often turn to a guy and say, yeah, just, if I see someone really leans in and they're just getting really excited, or actually, I lie, they'll never get excited, these particular people, they'll lean forward and they get this really earnest look on their face. I usually stop and say, can you just tell me a bit about yourself? Are you an accountant or an engineer? Which one? And it's usually, you realize how often it's an accountant or an engineer. They're just the way their brain works, and they love the detail, the technical.
Yep.
Okay, that's how it works. Now I understand how the thing works, I can work everything else around it. You know?
That's me, so definitely.
In training. Yeah, exactly. And in training people, but at the same time, I have to use analogies like, filling sinks with water, different golf clubs, learning to drive a car, because other people can only grasp it that way, So when you're training, you've got to say the same thing
six different ways, yes,
with different levels of complexity, and at the same time note the people who are dribbling and reassure them that you don't need to know this to shoot. That kind of thing. You have to let them know, yes, I'm talking this stuff, and yes, this stuff is about photography, but you don't need to know this to shoot. At the end of the day, if all you can remember is big number, big focus, small number, small focus for aperture, that's enough. If that's what it takes, if that's the way you can grasp it and remember it, you're done, So, it's that kind of thing. I reckon that's what Lightroom importing's like. The whole workflow thing has that same human foibles around it. What people are, what the utopian ideal is versus the reality, and everyone's in between, some stage in between there, And so that's why it's hard to. I don't know where Blinder's actually living. By chance, I have my awesome web designer / Lightroom guru, Dave Oakley, and I are running a Lightroom workflow workshop in August.
Oh, really?
And by I mean he.
Yeah, right.
Because you wouldn't want to do my system. but we are going to be running that kind of thing. And workflow is one of those things that's also a little bit like, Photoshop, there's a million ways to do the same thing.
Yes.
And workflow, that's where it can get confusing. You go on the internet and you read 10 different people's workflows and they all do it 10 different ways. Which one's right or wrong,
Yeah.
Your system sounds the best of anything I've heard.
Right.
The tagging, that makes all the sense in the world to me.
Yeah.
I'll just know I'll never do it.
Fair enough. And that's and that's the thing. Everyone's different.
But logically, I know that. That's the best system I've heard today. No questions asked. Gee, it'd be nice if someone could do that for me. that's the next step in my thought process. What if my wife would do that? But good question, Blinder. And hope our slight rambling ranting helped a little bit. Towards that.
Yeah.
Little bit, not too much, because we don't want to set examples where we can't live up to down the track, where people expect good stuff every week.
Can't set the bar too high for ourselves.
No, exactly.
Speaking of setting the bar too high for ourselves, I must once again implore you, if you haven't liked the Facebook page, to go and check out Dave Clark's new poster this week, which I feel probably needs a little bit of an explanation for our international audience. For those who don't live in Australia, Tasmania, if you are not aware, is a small island to the south of Australia. It is part of Australia. From a political point of view, it is part of Australia. And there has been... there's been a bit of an urban legend to grow up over the 225 years that Australia has been a developing nation, that because of the small geographical footprint of Tasmania, that there is a lot of inbreeding that goes on down there. Now, most Tasmanians will laugh it off. Some get a little bit hot under the collar when you mention this. Dave Clark is good enough to take it with a smile. But one of the things that has grown out of this urban legend is the idea that all Tasmanians have two heads as a result of the inbreeding that goes on. So the poster that Dave Clark has made up this week, with a tripod with two heads on it, It's all about the urban legend of Tasmanians having two heads. And it's quite customary if you bump into someone from Tasmania to ask them if you can see the scar. The scar being That's the right. theoretical scar on the neck where the second head has been removed. And like I said, most Tasmanians will laugh it off. Some will probably biff you on the nose.
Last time I was running workshops in Tasmania, I got a hairdresser's head. Yeah, they use the heads to the hairdressing on. And I stuck it up my shirt so I had two heads so I could feel part of the family. You know?
Did you really?
That went out. I did, yeah. That went down a treat, as you can imagine. Yeah. Speaking of the lovely people in Tasmania, there will be new Hobart dates coming for workshops soon. First time ever to the general public, I'm going to be running workshops down in Hobart.
Fantastic. Do you charge double the price?
So I've been running... Well, yeah, it's two heads for the price of one. I think it's a special deal we're going to be doing. Every time I've been to Tasmania, it's always been for the Hobart Photographic Society, and I want to do some stuff for the non-members. So,
okay.
Speaking of Tassie, cool. I'll put that out there now if you do happen to live down that way.
Excellent. Now,
speaking of sellouts,
not
that we were, but the Ellen Crom event we were talking about last week.
Yeah.
Remember the Electron Master lighting class that I happened to be running? Sold out in record time.
But it's free.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, okay. Well, yeah, put it that way. It could be white sold out. But, it's filled up in record time. It's all closed now.
So they were actually taking like registrations for seats, were they?
Yeah. There's like 100 people per event. And, they're all gone and filled up and done. I should have mentioned that I'm running the Melbourne one, so that, just in case anyone, maybe I'm going to cash the tickets in or something.
Sell them to scalpers.
Just in case it got lost. No, just to give it up so they don't have to come themselves. Just in case they got lost in translation, I'm doing the Melbourne ones. And you might. No. Speaking of which, I'm also, you know, going to be doing some more studio lighting workshops in Melbourne soon too. So,
I've got
lots on the boil. It's crazy busy at the moment. I've got workshops galore going up and
good stuff.
Yeah, I finally got a day to sit at the computer and actually get organised. Nice. So that's all good. So you're going to Borneo.
Yeah,
and I came across this thing this week that may be of interest to you.
Oh, okay.
And maybe interest to anyone else who travels to countries as photographers,
mm-hmm.
that those countries may not be as well off as ours, necessarily, right. as far as some of the living standards of some of the people.
Yeah.
And there's a horrible thing called poverty tourism photography, which is fairly fairly commonplace, where people travel to fairly disparate places, horrible places, and or places that have very sad situations for their intent of shooting.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's what you're doing, but at some point during your trip, I envision you'll come across some people you're going to want to take the photos of, and I certainly hope you do.
Yeah.
And you'll do it with a good grace and good manner and love that I'd expect you would normally do.
Of course.
And that's what most photographers do.
Right.
But, you know, there's still, you know, if you go to somewhere like India, and there's still some photographer's guilt, I guess is probably the right term, for us caring people who worry a bit. There's a bit of photographer's guilt sometimes in taking some of these photos. Would you agree? No?
Yeah, I've never felt
that way.
Well,
it depends on where you go. Not necessarily Borneo, but if you get to somewhere, if you've ever gone out and photographed a homeless person.
Which I haven't done.
Yeah, I mean, you go there to shoot them because, they've got an amazing face and they're weathered and they're beaten down by life. And you go there, you're basically taking advantage of the situation of this person's life that's made this particular photo possible, you know?
Yep.
Now, I've often, you know, people often say to me, oh, you know, do you ever pay for your photos? Well, absolutely, I do, you know? If I feel, you know, that, you know, I'm not being conned, and even then sometimes I still pay. But, you know, if you're, you know, if a couple of bucks to people, you know, to hand out, it's less than a cup of coffee and it can make a difference.
Yeah.
But what I came across this week is a thing called Photo Circle.
Okay.
And Photo Circle is basically it's like a crowdsourcing website in some ways.
Right.
That let's say you go to India. Let's say you go to Delhi and you take a whole series of awesome photos and you get back home and you're going through them and you're looking at some of the photos and I'm not saying they're exploitative, but there's a little bit of, you may be feeling a bit of photographer's guilt about some of the lifestyles. Well, you can go to this photo circle, donate a couple of bucks to this website, and then choose a charity or a program that's happening in that country or that area to donate to.
Oh, nice.
So it sort of comes back. It's sort of, you know, you're paying back into the community a little bit of the joy that you've got from these images, or a little bit of the, you know, maybe it's angst, maybe it's guilt, maybe it's just plain joy, either way. But I think it's a cool, cool idea. And I was rather wrapped with it. Yeah, my dear wife actually found it and sent it to me.
Okay, but if you were that way inclined, why not just make a donation to a charity while you're on the ground in country?
Well, you know, they're not, it's necessarily that easy to come across.
Okay, fair
you
enough.
Don't necessarily know who you're donating to, or whether it's a con, whether it's not. It's pretty easy to get conned in these places as well.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't want to be in an environment that, you know, you don't necessarily go into a closed building away from people. I'm being deadly serious. You can get into some pretty nasty situations. So, you know, sometimes it's just better to sit back when you get home in the calm of your own home and look at some of the opportunities that are available for you to donate to. But coming from a photographic point of view, from people who understand and feel, and it shows that if we all go through that site to donate, then these, it may filter down that photographers aren't bad people to be in these areas, that the good people to associate with, and they care and they give back to the communities.
Yeah, right.
So I just thought it was kind of a nice. Yeah, so yeah. It's photocircle.net.
Okay.
You know, it's just something different. I just think it's a different. It's just a different way of thinking about the world, but from a photographer's point of view.
Yeah, nice.
And you know, it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, but I kind of liked it. Yeah. So I'm going to become a regular contributor.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, because when I a lot going through the US, you know, I might be driving. I drive to workshops from where I'm staying to where I'm running the events. And the amount of times you go past, you know, massive queues outside food banks, where people are lining up to get a bit of food. Yeah,
yep.
This is America. This is Pennsylvania. It's Philadelphia. It's Los Angeles. It's, you know, supposedly not a third world country, but people living third world standards. So yeah, you drive past it, you do feel a bit of, you know, I feel a bit of guilt. Yeah, you know, I feel a bit of, at least a bit of a twinge of the conscience or something, that, you know, there's me making this money from this out of this community and taking that money away, because if I'm earning over there, I'm bringing it back over here.
Yeah.
Just a little way to give back. You know?
Nice.
So if you have travelled recently, or you're planning on travelling, and you want to sort of give a little back, doesn't have to be $5 or $10. It doesn't have to be a lot of money, but it can make a difference.
Yeah. No, that's nice.
Yeah.
We got an email through the week from Erin King.
We did.
Follow
up. Glad you remembered to mention that.
Yeah, and she said, "Hi there, here's the update of my sister's wedding photo shenanigans." Basically, after a bit of, and for those who didn't catch the first half of this story, it was two or three episodes ago, Erin was explaining about how her sister and brother-in-law had paid a significantly large amount of money to have wedding photos provided. The studio in question basically went into receivership, and they didn't get all of the things that they had paid for. So this is the follow-up.
Well, they didn't get anything, if you remember. Yeah, because they'd...
No, that's right. They hadn't
paid
either.
Off by,
they were paying in installments.
From what I can gather, they were almost up to five figures of how much they'd already paid, which is a significant sum.
Yeah.
You know?
So she says, basically, after a bit of to-ing and fro-ing with a contact working in conjunction with the business, my brother-in-law finally got a hold of the solicitor looking after the liquidation process. They were told that they were entitled to the photographs and whatever other items in their package that had been completed, though that came with an annoying caveat. Because the business outsourced a lot of the work for different products, my sister might have been up for more costs depending on if those other businesses had been paid. Apparently, this was an issue as the photography business had already been in trouble with its suppliers for ages, long before the sad event of late last year. Anyway, in the end, the solicitor was as good as his word, and my sister was able to get the entire collection of raw pics, as well as the edited photographs which had been completed to date, and the finished wedding video with no extra charges. A good thing, since they'd paid close to about $9,000 anyway. We now start the process of editing pictures and arranging an album. And since this is me, and you know my addiction to Photoshop, I couldn't be happier at the prospect personally. Any recommendations for good album printers? Cheers, Erin King. Well, as I said to Erin, I've had a couple of photo books done recently through photobookshop.com.au and have been absolutely wrapped in the quality of the product that's come back from them. So I'd be quite happy to recommend them, Erin. Glyn, any favourite suppliers of photo books?
Look, to me, there's only one.
Right.
But it depends on what quality you're after. If you want the absolute best, if this is a keepsake for the rest of your life and you want the best, you've got to go to a Newlab, N-U-L-A-B.
Oh, okay. Yep.
And their books are, I mean, they've won pretty much every printing award in the world.
Wow.
Including in categories that are against some of the biggest names in the world. They just keep winning for quality. Their stuff is astounding.
Wow.
But, you know, they're expensive, yeah, but you want the best photo book in the world and you're prepared to pay, yeah. Let's face it, if you spend nearly $10,000 on so far on your wedding stuff and you've got nothing, you're probably going to kick out $600 or $700 for a book.
Yeah.
And that thing is going to be a masterpiece that you'll love for the rest of your life. Yeah, we're not talking the $120, $150 books here, but if you want for that kind of thing for weddings, Newlab. Newshots is a variation of their company. Newlab, or through PicPress, PicPress, mm-hmm. is their book arm. Astounding stuff.
Cool.
So,
okay,
it's yeah. But yeah, you check them. There's lots of great ones out there at the same time. You know, there are lots of very, very nice book people out there. One of the things I do love about the PicPress books are they have the ability to lay flat.
Oh,
rather
okay.
than having, you know, the curved pages, that have perfectly laying flat pages, which if you are doing like, you know, a panorama across two pages or an image across two pages, does look a lot nicer.
Yeah,
but that's just one little thing, you know.
Got to say, the quality of photo books over the last 5 years has just gone through the roof. Amazing. Yeah. Some of the
people are learning how to do it, learning how to get the best out of them as well, as far as the actual printers themselves, you know, they're learning new skills and new tricks.
You know, you see the quality of what comes back and you think, this is a one-off book that was only produced for my benefit and, you know, 10 years ago, this would have been inconceivable without spending four figures. You know? Just amazing.
Exactly.
So,
that's very, very cool.
Great stuff. Any other stuff you wanted to throw in?
Well, I got one little cool, you know, being the gadget. Yeah, it's not about the camera, it's not about the box, it's not about the lust of having a new box to open. I found a new camera that's pretty cool.
Okay.
having said all that, it's called the Bonzart, B-O-N-Z-A-R-T.
Yeah.
Ample, A-M-P-E-L.
Okay.
The Bonzart Ample.
Okay.
And it's a digital twin lens. So it's a TLR, twin lens reflex style camera.
Right.
That the bottom lens shoots normal photos and the top lens does tilt shift look.
Oh, okay.
It's a tilt shift in the top. It's just a cool, this looks like a $180 toy, effectively.
Man, it looks like a box brownie. Yeah.
It's awesome, isn't it?
It looks like a box brownie.
Isn't it so cool? I love it.
Awesome.
It'd just be fun to play with. Yeah, photography should be fun. Yeah, so it could be just a fun thing to play with. You know what? You're probably gonna get photos back that you see the world in a different way, which is never a bad thing in itself, you know?
For sure.
And I think it's just cool.
Yeah.
It's just a cool little gadget. So if anyone's out there looking for a bit of a fun toy, maybe they've got a birthday coming up or you know, Father's Day in September is not too far away. Yeah, not that my wife listens to this, but you know.
Well, we should mention, of course, that Father's Day in America was yesterday as we were recording.
Oh, yes.
Because I had one of the American listeners wishing me a happy Father's Day. I'm like, say what? And I had to explain to him, dude, in Australia, it's not till September.
Yeah, I've fallen for that one. Had gone to try and run events in the US on, and oh no, everything's closed. It's Father's Day. What do you mean everything's closed? I mean, it's a big event over there, Father's Day, compared to here.
Yeah.
I mean, they take it seriously. They actually go and see their parents and see their fathers and stuff. I think I called mine last year. I think I might have actually been away last year for my own Father's Day. That's happened a few times.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, they do take a lot more. They take Mother's Day and Father's Day a lot more serious than we do.
Right.
But, they do that with a lot of things.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's it for me. It's all I got, dude. Yeah, we've had a fun little chat.
Oh, today. We're not done yet. Belinda Coulson just came back and said that the because I posted a quick question to her saying what area of photography are you in, and she's replied with portraiture. So to reiterate, Belinda, I would say even if you don't go back and tag stuff you've done in the past, if you've got the kind of, you know, technically oriented brain that I have, and you're open to this idea of just getting into the habit of tagging everything as you import it, that's assuming, of course, you're using Lightroom, you might be using something else, just adopt that workflow from this day forward, so at least then everything is searchable down the track. I guess there's more to workflow than just, you know, metadata. There's also, you know, you can only do so much in Lightroom. There are some things you have to go to Photoshop for.
Absolutely.
And I guess with portraiture, I guess it would depend on whether or not you're doing realistic portraiture, in which case you could probably do most of your post-processing in Lightroom, or whether you're doing very, you know, fantasy-related portraiture along the lines of a Sue Bryce, in which case you definitely need to get out of Lightroom and into Photoshop. If that's the case, where you are needing to, you know, go to Photoshop to do part of your processing, then my preferred approach would be to right-click the image in the Lightroom, you know, catalog, and select Edit in, you know, Photoshop CS 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever version you're running. That will then open... In your preferences in Lightroom, you can specify... Sorry, I did just needed to jump back here before I go down that track. You can specify in the preferences in Lightroom what format it should open or create an image in when you tell it to edit an image in an external application like Photoshop. So your choices are TIFF or PSD, so Photoshop document. So depending on what you've got set there, Photoshop will launch and then create a version of that raw image, assuming, of course, you shot a raw image, in the format that you've chosen in the preferences, so a TIFF or a PSD. And the idea is that you would then save that back into the same folder where the raw image lives. Once you've done all of your editing in Photoshop and you've closed it and saved it, what I would do then is jump back into Lightroom in the loop view, which you can access with the keyboard shortcut G on your keyboard. On the left-hand side, you'll see the option to look at all the folders. Right-click on the folder where you have, you know, all of the photos from that particular shoot, which, you know, if you've used the date method, will be the date of the shoot. Right-click on that date, and from the drop-down menu that appears, you will see an option to synchronize folder. What that will do is force Lightroom to rescan the folder, and that way it will pick up the new version of the image that you've created, either in TIFF or PSD format, so that that image now appears in your Lightroom catalog. So that way, when you come back to that shoot, you know, months, years, or it might just be days later, you not only see the original RAW file, but you also see the version that you worked on in Photoshop. So that's just my 2 cents worth on workflow.
That was about $4 worth.
Thank you, mate.
I mean, we could probably talk for a whole hour on different things to do with workflow.
Only an hour?
Yeah, exactly.
It's about 4,000 web pages and about 500 videos on YouTube.
Exactly. Exactly. Look, Belinda, if you've got specific questions, please by all means fire them off to us in an email.
What kind of questions, sorry?
Regarding workflow.
Yeah, but did you say Pacific questions?
No, specific.
Sorry. Isn't that an ocean? Oh, it sounded like Pacific to me. Oh, that's an ocean. If you've got Atlantic questions.
Yes. Fire us an email, and I'd be more than happy to discuss it further on the next episode, which admittedly will be 3 weeks
away.
Absolutely.
But let's nail down to something, to getting more specifics is easy to answer than generalities.
Absolutely. I mean, asking, what should I do for workflow is like, you know, how long is a piece of string? There are so many variables in there.
No, there's only one answer to
that. Depends on the piece of string.
No, twice half its length.
Ah, of course. I fall for that every time. Hey, we got one other thing from Richard Animal came through during the week. Bruce, what Dave is referring to is as follows. When shooting in RAW, a camera displays...
Dave, at what? Relation to,
sorry. I'm trying to remember what this was, and I was hoping that by reading it out, it would come back to me.
I wouldn't pull you up straight away on the fact that you didn't know what he's talking about.
When shooting in RAW, a camera displays a JPEG version on the back of the camera first. When you import the photo into Lightroom, it displays these, slightly processed by the camera. Ah, that's right. This was, I think it was Dave Clark who was wanting to know when you import the images. Why did they come in with certain, you know, saturation and contrast adjustments already applied when they were imported into Lightroom? So what Richard Annabel is saying, Dave, is that the camera displays a JPEG version on the back of the camera first. When you import the photos into Lightroom, it displays these slightly processed by the camera photos until the actual flat RAW file can be loaded and displayed. Hope this helps.
Yeah. So when you click on it, it actually changes its look.
Right.
Yeah. So if you shoot RAW and JPEG at the same time.
Yep.
And you import with the box clicked, treat JPEG as a separate file.
Yep.
You'll have your RAW and your JPEG sitting next to each other. They'll look the same. Like if you shot in black and white as an example, your RAW and your JPEG will both look black and white until you actually click on the RAW file. That's what I find in mine.
Yep.
And it changes to the flat
processed. Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. I've never shot RAW and JPEG, so I've never come across that. So
I rarely shoot RAW, so I just remember it
from
times. That's what I've done it occasionally. So,
and finally, interesting. And finally, I got an email today from Carl Hemmings.
Yes.
Hi guys, really hate the show. It's full of non-technical stuff and too much laughter. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. Only joking. It's great.
What an a-hole. Sorry.
I thought you might be interested in the two versions of the Sigma lens you talked about a couple of episodes ago. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the 120-300mm 2.8 lens was the DX version, and the FX version costs a tad more, around $3,600. Still, a nice lens to envy.
Yeah, he's wrong. No, he's totally wrong.
Is he?
The difference between the two, one has a USB mount into the lens, so you can actually program and plug it straight into your computer and do who knows what to it.
Wow.
Where the other one doesn't. But they're both full sensor lenses.
Wow.
Well, full sensor, both 35mm sensor lenses.
Yeah, right. A USB port in a lens.
Yeah. So you can actually dock it and do who knows what kind of stuff to it.
Could it be that they have software to allow you to do your micro focusing adjustments on your computer rather than through the camera, or is it something different?
Who knows?
No, because that's a body-related function anyway, not a lens.
And it's so rare in the real world anyway that no one would spend that much money on the occasional chance that maybe one day I buy a camera that has a micro focus adjustment issue.
You don't ever use
it? It's
or you don't have it.
Micro adjustment focus?
Yeah.
No, I just don't believe in it. I don't think it exists.
I beg to differ.
Fairy at the bottom of the garden.
Really?
Yeah, with a Sony, maybe, you know.
Well, there it is.
I agree. That's happened at least one episode, each episode. I believe it exists, but I don't believe it's as big a problem or happens as often as the internet lets you believe or makes it out to believe. Okay. And the amount of people I see who show me, look, my camera's got focusing problems, it's either technique.
Yeah.
As in how they focus, how they use their camera, or movement as well is a significant factor. So, and you know what? It's also often about people shooting 1.2 lenses at 1.2 and never understanding why they can't get everything they want in focus. Fair so there's enough. A lot. What I'm saying is, yes, it does happen, but there's also a lot of other stuff out there that probably has a much higher percentage of the real world issues than a micro adjustment focus being needed to be done on your lens.
Okay.
That's just from my years of experience of dealing with it. But other than that, I wouldn't know what I'm talking about.
And I'm going to finish off with two links that I came across through the week. One was to lomography.com to a camera called the Constructor, spelt with a K.
It's Constructor.
It is.
Gigantor.
You remember the model aeroplane kits, like you had to put the aeroplane together and everything came in the your little punch-out panels? Right, well, this is a camera that comes flat-packed in the push-out plastic surround.
And yeah, you push them
all out and you build it yourself.
Yep.
I've
never actually put it together. I've played with the packaging and looked at them before. They're pretty cool, aren't they?
I thought it was just crazy. So I'll put the link to that in the show notes. And the other one was on DIYphotography.net, and it was a series of portraits that a guy did of people's heads, and they've put multiple rubber bands around their face before they've done these portraits. And so you get these people with these massively warped heads because of the rubber bands. It's hilarious to look at. So I'll put that in the show.
Funny stuff.
Did you see it?
Love it. No, I can visualise it straight away and see exactly what they'd be like. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Great idea.
All right, mate. Well, we shall take a hiatus for 3 weeks.
Not only that, we should have a break too.
One of those as well. Now, I get back into Australia on the Friday. I think it's about the 12th of July. Does that sound about right? Something like that.
Sure.
So I don't know how you're placed, whether or not you'd like to record on a Saturday and I'll turn this around in 24 hours and get it up on the Sunday.
You give me a holler when you get back and let's see how you're faring.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah, let's see how you... And if you're good to go and I'm available, because my amazing social life of... I don't have one. No, yeah, I'm probably going to be free. It's only a Saturday night. Why would I be doing anything?
Or a Saturday morning, or I don't know, whatever. But anyway, yeah, we'll talk.
No, Saturdays I'm running workshops, but Saturday night...
Okay.
Be about the only thing that'd be possible. But yeah, we'll see. Let's see how you're feeling.
Well, I'll give you a holler.
I care about you, Bruce. I care about you. I'll make sure that you're okay.
Thank you, mate. So that will be the Saturday the 13th. So there may be a podcast on Sunday the 14th of July. If there isn't, it'll be because I'm jet-lagged and knackered, in which case we'll record
on the... Or he's just not happy to talk to anybody.
That's it. Failing that, we'll record on the Tuesday and it'll be out on Sunday the 21st of July. So there we go. So I shall enjoy Borneo as best as I can. And,
suffer through it, dude.
Yes, I'll do that. And you have fun in my absence, and I'll speak to you when I get back.
You know, I'll be here.
I would hope so.
I've got no social life. I've got kids. You know, I've got no life. Yeah, I'll be here.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you when
I get
back.
Enjoy your holiday. I'm jealous.
Yeah.
I'm jealous. Bye.
See you, mate.
See you, mate. Have a great trip.
Thank you.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.